Hi, I'm Sean Suttner, news and features writer for Search Health IT. I'm here at Connected Health 2016, the Connected Health Symposium in Boston, and I'm here today with Casper DeClercq, general partner for Norwest Venture Partners, a big venture capital firm, and he's in charge of all healthcare investing for this company. And we're going to talk about digital health and whether it's a pipe dream or a reality and some other issues. So, Casper, you're speaking on a panel about whether is digital health yesterday's news or is it a long-term investment theme?
Yes. Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you today. I used to come from the device and pharmaceutical investing market where I spent 20 years, 30 years in operating companies and then investing, and have shifted my practice away from that, our practice, much more into digital health and the disruption that I will expect over the next 20 years in healthcare. It's an absolutely massive market, $3 trillion by most recent expectations, which is by far the largest sector in our economy, and it is going through massive disruption and will continue to do so over the next 10 to 20 years, I say.
Obviously, one of the current disruptions going on is the move to value-based care and, you know, widespread population health, the quick adoption of remote patient monitoring, using devices. Now, how are medical devices or healthcare wellness, whether class one or class two devices, going to play a role in this disruption?
Well, I think, first of all, a lot of people are quite naive about how quickly healthcare IT is going to change the world. I think the FDA has a very important role with respect to drugs and devices by requiring randomized control trials, by requiring good production and validation of the impact. What we see a lot in digital health is companies going after pilot and not designing those studies well. So I think it's important that we think of that, first of all. So the holy grail for healthcare and wearable devices or sensing is that we get high-quality data on patients continuously. I think it's extremely important that we start to integrate that information. What I'm concerned about is that the consumer products aren't necessarily of great quality, the data they get, and it is also very limited to what consumers are willing to put on their bodies. So the Fitbit, so effectively step counters, heart rate monitors, maybe blood pressure and weight seem to be the main things people use. I think we're going into a brave new world of both much more sophisticated wearable sensors and potentially implantable sensors, if you look at what Google is doing with Sanofi, for example.
Sure. And one theme of this conference we're at here in Boston, a fairly innovative connected health conference, is emotion sensing. There are intangibles, using sensors to gauge, you know, voice, facial recognition, emotional factors. Do you see a future in that kind of approach to digital healthcare technology?
I think we take a lead from other industries. I think healthcare, because it is regulated, because there are so many stakeholders, moves a lot more slowly than other industries. So I think once we see emotion recognition being used in consumer products, we can expect probably a five-year delay before we see it in healthcare. So very exciting, but I think it's going to take a while. And I would say that we can talk a little bit about this theme, but what we're seeing right now is massive expansion of access in healthcare. Secondly, what's going to be happening in population health is the correct targeting of the right patients. And then finally, personalization. So I think when you talk about emotion sensing, that's the last step, and I think is going to be the hardest step to begin to automate. That's why we have physicians, that we have psychiatrists and coaches.
Now, a lot of people are talking about care coordination now, and which is going to be critical under value-based care, bundled payments and things like that. So, are you investing in and looking to invest in companies that have really advanced software systems for care coordination along that continuum?
Care coordination is only as good as the information you can get, and so I come back to wearables and getting good data that consumers are willing to put up with. We talk about disruption of consumers, but why should I provide the data? There's a cost to me as a consumer. How much friction is there to collecting that information? So what we see has impacted the market tremendously is telemedicine, facilitating that and making it more accessible. Recent information from Kaiser suggests that 50% of their visits are telemedicine visits. So we see a lot of companies in that space. I think increasingly we'll see healthcare systems doing their own work, setting up those systems, because it does work with respect to value-based care, minimizing the cost and the inconvenience of visits, particularly for chronic disease. How can we make things easier for consumers and patients?
Now, I've seen remote patient monitoring become pretty commonplace for big academic medical centers. And some of the systems the vendors are selling seem to be pretty frictionless, right out of the box, Bluetooth already connected. Do you still think there's a long way to go in remote patient monitoring for chronic conditions as well?
Absolutely. We've had the experience personally of commercializing companies like that. We've invested in a company called Omada, which does a tremendously detailed and intensive coaching, but uses technology to facilitate that. Then you might see another company such as Twine, which is a little bit less automated, but enables a coach. And then
I'm actually interviewing Twine tomorrow, a video interview, yeah.
Great. It's a great company. And then finally, a company like WellDoc, which has completely automated with texting and got an FDA clearance for diabetes chronic care management. So with respect to large networks doing this remote monitoring, I think it's the best examples are remote monitoring for neurology, for patients that have had a stroke, for referring hospitals to send those patients to an academic center, and they don't have in the rural areas access to neurologists, so the remote call-in for a neurologist to assess that patient.
Telestroke?
Telestroke's a great one. I think chronic diseases are just much, much harder. We're talking about long-term engagement of a patient, and the biggest concern I have about a lot of startups is they don't take into account the Hawthorne effect, which is you see something in a couple months, but it's really hard to sustain engagement for 12 months, 24 months, which you need to do for chronic disease.
Now, Casper, there are a lot of startups here at Connected Health in Boston. Without being too harsh, what percentage of these will succeed in their health IT mission?
Yeah. Well, we have a hard job deciding where to put our money. As you know, $2 billion a year has gone into healthcare IT over the last 3 years. So I think, unfortunately, probably 80% of that is not going to be successful. And as a venture capitalist, as an investor, we need to find those few companies that we know are going to be winners. What we look for is good clinical evidence. We look for impact. We look for outcomes. We don't look for pilots.
Okay, so let's say one of these companies has good clinical trials or successful pilots. Who's buying this technology, and how can CIOs or other buyers, even if they're on the payer side or the provider side, how can they evaluate the ROI of the digital health systems?
That is a brilliant question. I think it's probably the most important question facing us in healthcare IT. I would generalize this somewhat at risk to say that if you don't have an ROI within a year, it is extremely hard, if not impossible, to get things through the healthcare system to get it paid for. So unless Medicare or states decide to change this by regulation, where economics are forced to change, either single actors, so value-based hospitals or payers, simply will not do that. And the reason is we have such cost overruns right now that nobody can forward invest in chronic disease 2, 3, 4 years down the road. The exceptions to that would be the DPP program, which Medicare just approved, and CCM codes, which is paying physicians for 20 minutes of non-face-to-face time, which is enabling technology.
So you do things, you see, I hear you saying that telehealth is moving ahead pretty well because of some payment changes and changes in Medicare reimbursement and legislative changes across the country, right?
That's exactly right. And so think about it from a personal perspective. If you've got a chronic disease, and I say if you lose weight now, you'll be much better off, or you're 20% less likely to have a heart attack in 5 years. How many of our peers or how many of us would actually change our behavior? We know that that's very hard to do. So it requires really intensive coaching, somebody who supports you, what's called the sentinel effect. If I know somebody's watching and cares about me, I'll change my behavior. That is the kind of investment that's required, which is a company like Somata really gets involved with the patients to motivate them in the near term. And hopefully in the longer term, we see an impact. But I think it's hard for even value-based providers to invest in something that doesn't have a near-term return.
Casper, I guess I got to ask you, maybe you can get to a few of your other points, but what's the next big blockbuster healthcare device? What's the next iPhone of healthcare? In other words, the way the iPhone revolutionized the smartphone space, everybody has to have an iPhone or an Android or whatever. What is that development going to be in healthcare? Or is it going to be a series of devices?
Well, people speak of the tricorder and the tricorder prize. I think that's a great futuristic thought. But let's just look at what's going on. The cell phone is a ubiquitous device. And increasingly, we're seeing very low-cost sensors being put in, things that used to cost $1,000 going down to 10, down to 1, down to 10 cents. So we're seeing a lot of elaboration, gas sensing, for example, of those types of sensors going into phones. Obviously, if it needs to be wearable or implantable, that's not going to work, but we'll see a lot of interface there. I think the other very important thing is Bluetooth simply does not work. It's not robust enough. I think people are naive thinking that an elderly patient is going to be pairing their Bluetooth device. Once that becomes seamless, then we will get a great flow of data in a very frictionless way. So I would say it's hard to imagine there's going to be a holy grail or a simple solution. I think it's going to be around cell phones. It's going to be ubiquitous presence, connectivity, and in a way facilitating communication between the provider and the patient in the way we've seen it with respect to conference calling or FaceTime or anything like that in the consumer space.
Okay, anything else you'd like to add, Casper?
Yeah, I think that the technology front of things in healthcare is very exciting, but I think for the next, I'd say 4 to 5 years, we're going to see technology-enabled services first. It's a bit like a manufacturing problem. You start with manual assembly, then you do semi-automation, then you do full automation. We can't start with full automation and expect it to work. So it's about targeting the right patients where we can actually spend more money to save those very expensive, for example, readmissions to a hospital. That's incredibly valuable in terms of preventing readmissions. And you can invest, $100, $500, $1,000 to stop that patient from coming in for an unnecessary procedure in the ER.
One last thing. What have you seen here, not in terms of specific companies, but what have you seen here at this event that piques your interest? What kind of technologies? What kind of approaches?
I think where Partners leads the way is in population health and recognizing the importance and the difficulty of patient engagement. So I'm not quite as optimistic about changing sort of neurological diseases. They're very long-term problems and very hard to fix in the short term. Behavioral health is very interesting, and certainly anything that takes a population, targets the individuals, and then seeks to engage those patients. There are a lot of companies doing that here at the conference, and so I'd recommend taking a look around the floor.
Okay, thanks a lot. Thanks for being here with Surge Health IT today. Our guest was Casper De Klerk of Norwest Venture Partners.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks a lot.